fear. The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team. Earth's mightiest heroes type thing.
Yes. I've met them.
Yeah. Takes us a while to get any traction, I'll give you that one. But let's do a head count here. Your brother, the demigod. A super soldier, a living legend who kind of lives up to the legend. A man with breathtaking anger management issues. A couple of master assassins, and you, big fella. You've managed to piss off every single one of them.
That was the plan.
Not a great plan. When they come, and they will, they'll come for you.
I have an army.
We have a Hulk.
Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's new podcast. I'm Matt Goldberg, Collider's managing editor, and with me today are associate editors Adam Chitwood.
Hello.
And Dave Trumbore.
Hey, guys.
Today we will be talking about The Avengers, the 1998 film starring Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes. It'll be a great conversation. I hope you stay tuned. We'll also be providing our recommendations and talking a little bit about the ending of The Avenger. Oh, wait. Okay. Wait. Different Avengers. Okay. One with the superheroes. Okay. We'll be talking about that one. That one made $200 million this weekend. So domestically, it's made about $650. Yeah, we'll talk about that one. We'll talk about the one with the superheroes. So let's get to it. This is going to be a full Avengers show, and let's kick it off. The movie made $200 million. It shattered Harry Potter's previous record, which I believe was $169 million over one weekend. And it wasn't certain that it would beat it out, because Harry Potter still holds the record for biggest midnight opening. But Avengers shattered the lead, and it brought me back to how just 10 years ago it was such a huge deal when Spider-Man broke $100 million in an opening weekend. It was just like, oh my god, in all the years it's never happened before. And now it's just like, oh, that's adorable. It made $100 million over an opening weekend. And obviously there are a lot of contributing factors here. 3D, IMAX, the fact that there are more movie theater screens out in the world to make this happen. And so I'll hand this off to you guys. Dave, what were your thoughts on sort of the Avengers scoring this incredible box office? And what do you think are the contributing factors? And what do you think this means for the rest of the summer?
Oh, well, first of all, well-deserved box office. I mean, this is fantastic. This is something that they've been building towards for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, if not more. So anything less than record-breaking proportions would have been a letdown for this property. That being said, I don't think it was just from the hype from the relentless marketing machine of Marvel. I think it's just the product of having really good actors with a really good director and a great script. I mean, it's not a perfect movie, I'll say that, but it's incredibly entertaining, very enjoyable, and it's got repeatability. It's got, you know, it'll get you back to the theater a second time to watch it. So I really think this is just the tip of the iceberg here, but a well-deserved opening weekend for the Avengers, that's for sure.
Adam, what about you? What were your thoughts when you saw the $200 million opening weekend gross?
I was really surprised. Most people had pegged it around like 165, 175 million. When we were heading like towards the opening weekend, I thought it would do okay. I figured it'd fall somewhere between I figured it'd beat the Dark Knights of 158, but I figured it'd fall short of the Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. Mostly because it's not a sequel. I mean, you could argue that it's a follow-up to all the other previous movies, but as we've seen from the grosses of those other movies, they're good, but they're not, like, otherworldly. There's nothing kind of stellar about the box office for the other movies except for the Iron Man and Iron Man 2. As far as contributing factors go, 3D has a lot to do with it, as does IMAX. But the biggest thing to look at is on Friday, it had not broken Harry Potter's Friday record. It was still about 10 million short from that. So you just have to assume that a lot of this is from word of mouth, from people going and seeing it and saying like, wow, this movie is really good, and taking their friends. Also repeat business. I know a lot of people that went more than once this weekend. And that's a testament to Joss Whedon just making a really, really entertaining and good movie, like a quality movie with a lot of humor. I read that IMAX was they had like filled all of their seats. They're running out of seats to sell this weekend for the movie. So, 30 million above the record. That's a this is definitely back to the Spider-Man days, and I think it's going to be a while before something else breaks that record. I know people have been pegging the Avengers against the Dark Knight Rises all year, like which movie's going to do better, but seeing as how the Dark Knight Rises is not in 3D, there's really no chance of it getting up that high for the opening weekend. So Spider-Man stuck around. It kept that record for 4 years until Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest came along. So it's going to take something really, really big to hit that 200 million barrier.
See, I also didn't believe it would beat Harry Potter simply because Harry Potter feels more universal. It feels like it hits more, to use a terrible marketing studio phrase, quadrants. But it does. Avengers just seem like, oh, it's geeks, and I mean, that'll be huge. All the previous ones have had big openings, and that's fantastic, but this is a sequel, and it's a sequel that doesn't have a clear 1, 2, 3, 4 lineage. You actually have to go and see it, you know, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, and arguably Incredible Hulk, and collect all of those. And that's only been building since 2008, whereas Harry Potter was building since 2001. I was surprised, but Adam, I think you're absolutely correct. People were seeing it and then coming back again this weekend, and really positive word of mouth. I tweeted about how they really need to keep Joss Whedon for the Avengers 2, provided he wants to do it. And Dave Chen, who runs /Filmcast, he responded to me on Facebook asking if he thought the movie would have grossed as he asked if the Avengers would have grossed as much if it had been good and not great. And I responded that I don't think the gross would have been quite as high, because if you tell someone that a movie is good, not great, I believe the response is, I'll wait a week then. I don't need to see this right now. When a movie is great, then everyone wants to be on it as fast as possible, to be part of that conversation, to be at the water cooler on Monday, because water coolers are a place to gather, as the cliche goes, because you can't talk about things you like unless you're near the water cooler. Talking about them anywhere else will get you fired.
Can we rename the podcast true. The Water Cooler?
I'm sure no one else has ever Probably named not. Their podcast The Water Cooler, so I think nope. We should do it. We'll now be now be the Water Cooler podcast from a bunch of guys who work at home. And so the event, I believe that Joss Whedon was such an integral part in helping this movie get to its gross. I think the movie probably still would have beaten Harry Potter's record, but it wasn't enough to just be good. To get this, you have to be great. You have to be a film where you can get that 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, and someone's like, oh, everything I'm reading is positive, and all my friends say it's positive, and I really want to see this because I liked these previous movies. That's the other half of it, because there's such a variety there that a film like Harry Potter doesn't have, because at some point it's like you either like Harry Potter or you don't. But perhaps you went into the previous Marvel movies like, well, I didn't like Thor, but I really like Captain America and Iron Man, so I'm going to go see this. So I would say that it's interesting. I'm sure this will be dissected in the weeks to come about why did it make so much money, and people looking at cinema scores and exit polls or whatever studios do. Do they do exit polls, or is that just what cinema
scores? Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, let's go with exit polls. I know how the business works. So I think that's part of what went into it. Now, Adam, you brought up the doesn't make as much money as The Dark Knight Rises. I believe it doesn't. Dave, what are your thoughts on how this record will stand and how it will stand up to the rest of the summer?
So hold on. Are you saying you don't think Dark Knight Rises is going to top this when it comes out?
No.
Okay. Doesn't. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, only for the fact that it's the 3D and the IMAX that's kind of limiting it. I do believe that as the end of the trilogy, it's going to be hugely popular. I mean, that goes without saying, but I don't think it's going to come close to touching this record. I don't know what really is going to be coming out in the next few years, besides the sequel to The Avengers itself, that is going to come close to touching it. And to be honest, this 200 million first, you know, opening weekend for The Avengers, that sets a high bar for its own sequel. So it's going to be an interesting couple of years to see what happens in terms of this record.
How fast do you guys think Marvel's going to try to get the sequel out?
I mean, reading what Kevin Feige has to say and stuff, I have to put faith in him that, I mean, he kind of seems like he knows what he's doing. So, I mean, and they have this plan of like all their other movies too. We've got Thor 2 and Iron Man 3 coming down the pipeline. They also have Captain America 2 and an unnamed movie for 2014. I don't think we see the Avengers 2 anytime before 2015. I think that's the soonest that they would roll it out.
I agree. I think 2015 is if they really pushed, they might be able to get it by 2014. But I think 2015 is a reasonable date to shoot for.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I feel like I'm beating around the bush about what I feel very passionately about, which is I really believe Joss Whedon needs to come back and helm the Avengers 2, because Marvel has had a bunch of successful movies before. This is their most successful opening weekend, but they've been very quick to dismiss their directors.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very hit it and quit it mentality. It's like, oh, thanks for this. Now let's see what TV director we can call to sort of to get our next movie done. I definitely think Marvel should not cheap out on this one. Give, if Joss Whedon wants to come back, give him some more money, give him some time. I mean, if you're looking 20, I think 2015 is a fair date. I don't think that's a Hunger Games style rush for the next one. And cause they haven't even announced a release date yet. Catching Fire had already been pegged for a November 22nd, 2013 release. But I think Marvel needs to make Joss Whedon their Christopher Nolan.
You know, though, that's going to be interesting, because no matter what, the sequel is going to be huge. I don't care who's attached to it, unless, you know, you completely replace everybody in the cast. But this is one of those things where they know they have a guaranteed ass in the seats.
Sure,
for the sequel.
But define huge, because at the same time, what we're talking, we've just, I don't know if we agreed on it, but I mean, do you believe that this weekend that there was a higher box office gross because people thought the film was good? And I believe that part of the way it makes the film great is because of Joss Whedon.
I definitely agree on both of those counts.
Voice to it.
What I'm saying now is that for that sequel, it's a guaranteed great opening weekend.
Absolutely
guaranteed. But it doesn't matter if he's attached to it or not. It helps if he is.
Right.
But the interesting thing will be to see if they play this game and if it's another sort of disappointment in Whedon's career. I really think an interesting side story to this whole thing is tracing Whedon's career. And everybody knows kind of his ups and downs, his disappointments along the way, sort of his grudge that he still holds for certain projects. And this can be his sort of his shining moment, and hopefully it just gets better for him from here on out. Or this can just be on the path to another big disappointment if they decide to go, you know, and go on the cheap and have somebody else come back and direct it.
I don't think there's any disappointment for Joss Whedon at all. If they go another way, he's set. He has picked up so much cash from this film. He directed a $200 million movie. And
True.
You can say, oh, that was just because of the properties or whatever. But I'll tell you this right now. Yes, I was in a geek-filled audience when I saw it at midnight. But of every name they ran during the end credits, Joss Whedon's got the biggest applause. And he makes the film distinct. And I absolutely agree that while the opening weekend for Avengers 2 will be huge,
mm-hmm.
if it's good, not great, then it may not be bigger than this weekend right here. And for Marvel, that's kind of unacceptable. You have to say this is bigger and better and therefore deserves to be more than $200 million opening weekend. And I think if you stick with Joss Whedon, you have a better shot at doing that than if you pull like an F. Gary Gray to try and do that.
Sure.
Or an Antoine Fuqua or some journeyman director who isn't gonna who at best could try to imitate Whedon and come up very short. I think Marvel needs to say this is a franchise with a vision, not just a vision, but a voice. I think that's a big distinction to make. I think Branagh and Johnston established tones with Thor and Captain America respectively.
Right.
But those films, those tones can be imitated. They can't be, but Avengers has its own voice. I think if that's clear, that there's a distinction there.
Yeah, I get depressed at the thought of them bringing some lesser director in and them trying to replicate Whedon's humor, throwing all these cheap jokes in there that aren't funny and don't land.
I absolutely agree. Adam, what do you think about Whedon's contribution, and do you think Marvel will bring him back based on their track record?
I think he put, like, the film is undeniably his. I mean, his stamp is all over the place. All the humor, most of what makes it work is Joss Whedon. I know a lot of people that weren't really planning on seeing the Avengers because they had seen the other Marvel movies and their opinion was like, you know, they're fine. And I haven't really seen a Marvel movie that I loved, and they're all kind of disposable entertainment. And the Avengers, like, everyone I talked to that I told, like, you have to see this movie, it's great. They all absolutely loved it. There's something special about the Avengers that wasn't in the other movies. And it's not the fact that they've got everyone together. It's not just like, oh, the secret to success is to pull all the superheroes together. It's undeniably, it's Whedon's tone. It's how Whedon crafted the movie. It's that it's so much fun. It's the entertainment value. I would hope that Marvel would bring him back. Another question to ask, does he want to come back? I mean, if Marvel is very famous for having, you know, they kind of have strict restrictions for their movies. They kind of lay out the plan and give it to the director and say, you know, like, here's kind of our story idea and here's where you need to go. And taking the Avengers, you know, it's a huge opportunity. So Joss Whedon was more than happy to take their plan and everything. But if, like, say he has a different creative vision, say he wants to go someplace else and Marvel doesn't want to veer too far off the tracks, there's kind of a lot of variables in there. So I could see him easily coming back, but I could also see him easily not coming back, whether Marvel decides not to bring him back or they do. I would hope, I mean, we all hope upon hope that we're looking at this box office and everyone's saying that it doesn't matter. But the way it matters is that other studios are looking at it and saying, how can we replicate that movie's success? And all of us are hoping that they're looking at the fact that it's a quality movie and that it's Joss Whedon and it's a great script and great acting and not just explosions and a bunch of characters together. So I'm hoping Marvel sees that same thing.
Well, here's the other issue, though, because not only will every studio be like, how can we replicate the Avengers? Every studio is like, how can we be in the Joss Whedon business? How can we say from the director of the Avengers and say, hey, Joss, what have you always wanted to do? Because now you can.
Offers.
Exactly. And so, and that's the other question. Is there time for him to make a movie between this and Avengers 2? Because, for instance, Paramount was willing to give J.J. Abrams time to make Super 8 in between Star Treks. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers was willing to give Christopher Nolan space to make The Prestige and Inception in between the Batman movies. And so for, I guess, now Disney, are they willing to, if Joss Whedon comes along and says, hey, I want to make this kind of movie, and he gives them a schedule that says there will be the Avengers maybe in 2016 rather than 2015, is that being unreasonable? Should they get rid of him? Or, and I think this is a benefit, this could be a side benefit, let's say you wait till 2016 for the Avengers 2, right? Yeah, it's a four-year wait. However, think about how many other Marvel movies you could do in between. You could do your Black Widow spinoff. You could do try to give the Hulk another shot now that you seem to have understood that the character can be fun. Or arguably, maybe the character just works better with other superheroes. Either way, Marvel has made, you know, they're saying so much about other new characters they want to do. Well, do you want – think about if you want to build to the Avengers 2 – isn't it a good idea to start setting up new individual franchises rather than just more Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America? That's sort of my thing. Dave, what about you? What do you think about in terms of how much time should Marvel work to try to bring Joss Whedon back in terms of if he wants to come back?
Yeah, presuming he wants another incredibly huge payday like this. And really, I think it seems like he enjoyed just working on this film too. I mean, every character, every action sequence, every bit of dialogue, it's got his brushstrokes to it. And every single one of the characters, some more than others, are defined in a certain way that it's an assembly of these characters and these heroes, but they all have their sort of tone. You know, Cap was a little more reserved, a little more reluctant. Obviously Iron Man is all Flash. Things like that, they're just – Whedon defined them very well. What I worry about is waiting too long and building too many other movies in between, you might just get some confusion with that character because now Whedon has sort of put his stamp on the collective, but the future installments, so Iron Man 3, you know, Cap 2, Thor 2, any new movies that they come in, they're all, I mean, Whedon can't direct all of them, obviously, so they're all going to have different kind of spins and different takes, and I don't know if that's going to be a consistency problem. Also, talking about the sequel in a plot sense, and I know we'll get to that later on in the show, talking to some super comic book geek friends of mine, they really are going to have to power this team up to deal with the threat in the sequel. And the only way to do that is to introduce characters in the meantime. Now, we're sort of getting into the realms of, we're getting away from the gritty, realistic style of these superhero movies, and you're going to have to, because in order to deal with the threat that was present at the end of the first Avengers, you're going to have to power this team up, and it's going to have to be something a little more than a guy in a mechanical suit. But that being said, you really have to have Whedon come back for the sequel. I can't imagine them not making it worth his while, and worth their while, too, to have him come back. I mean, I really hope that that's the way they choose to go with it. But a lot can happen in 3 or 4 years.
Well, there's also... Oh, I'm sorry, Adam, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, Marvel's track record with their directors is absolutely terrible. I mean, the only director that's come back has been Jon Favreau for Iron Man 2, and we all heard the stories about how what a terrible production that was, and how Jon Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. were butting heads with the studio and with the story, and that's why he didn't come back for Iron Man 3. I mean, they have yet to keep a director on in a happy fashion, and even Thor has gone through 3 directors before it's even begun production. So if Whedon does come back, it will be the exception to the rule, and I don't know. It's just kind of nerve-wracking to think that think what could happen.
Well, Whedon would also be in a unique position that no director in Marvel has come before, because he's the one that oversaw all the superheroes coming together.
Sure.
Now that all the superheroes go their separate ways but are all coming back for the Avengers 2, does that put Joss Whedon in a position where he's like, I will direct the Avengers 2, but now I get to work as an overseer in terms of all the other Marvel movies leading to that one? Because if I'm going to write the Avengers 2, I want to have a say in where these other plot lines are going. Now, granted, he was able to pull all the other movies together, take what was necessary, and build a film anyway. So arguably, he could just be like, you do your movies, and I'll find a way to weave them all together for the Avengers 2. But if they were to bring him, say, at this point, you are our Avengers 2 guy, I don't see how you can bring him back and he's going to be like, well, you guys do your own thing. Let me know when production starts. I'll come right back along. How does he – does? It's not going to be like the first time where he – the other movies were already in motion and doing their own thing. He did come in for Captain America and have some uncredited work done on that script. But for the most part, those movies were already done. This time around, he has – he could conceivably have the jump on everything, with the exception of Iron Man 3, which already seems to be well on its way to being whatever it's going to be. So there's also those questions. But again, with that kind of jump, he could have serious influence on the other Marvel movies in the interim. So actually, we've been talking a lot about Joss Whedon. We haven't been talking a lot about likes and dislikes about the movie. My review is already on the site.
Sure.
So, Adam, what did you think about the Avengers? What did you like and what didn't you like?
I really, really liked it. First of all, coming in, it had premiered, 3-4 weeks ago. So after reading all of this immense buzz, I kind of went into it expecting not to like it as much as everyone said it was, just because it was being hyped up so much. But I did really, really liked it. I love the characterizations. I loved Mark Ruffalo's Thor, or Mark Ruffalo's Hulk, not Mark Ruffalo's Thor. I thought Hulk was absolutely a standout character. Black Widow, Joss Whedon did more for her than anything that's ever been done in Iron Man 2. I loved her characterization. A couple of the characters got kind of slided. Jeremy Renner's Hawkeye didn't really have much to bring to the table. I didn't feel that Captain America had very much to do in the movie either. But Whedon has said there's half an hour of deleted scenes on the Blu-ray, so maybe those can kind of fill those gaps and everything. A couple of the action scenes, I wasn't a huge fan of Whedon's direction. I thought they were kind of...
Actually, just to pause, do we want to do a very quick synopsis of the Avengers, or are we just assuming like everyone's seen it? Do we want to do it? Does someone just want to try to do it in a minute or less?
I think everyone kind of knows.
Everyone kind of knows. Loki comes back. He wants the cosmic cube for some nefarious force to rule the Earth, and he's going to do it unless the Avengers stop him. The Avengers, the whole movie's getting the team together. That's most of the film, seeing how they work together and leading up to a spectacular third act. There, if you haven't seen the movie, now you've seen the movie. This podcast must be weird for you because we've been talking about a movie you haven't seen. Adam, back to you.
Yes, spectacular third act. I really did like the third act. Yes, it's derivative of the end of Transformers: Dark of the Moon. But the way Whedon shot it, it's a lot of fun. You actually care about these characters because everything that's gone on before, Whedon has injected so much characterization and so many moments into all these characters that you're excited to find out what they're doing and you want them to make it out alive. Some really like applause-worthy moments come in there, especially with the Hulk. My biggest issue with the movie, though, is the villains. I love Loki. I love Tom Hiddleston's Loki. I think it's fantastic. Obviously, Loki is a great villain to put in there, but when you're assembling the Avengers, obviously they need something else other than Loki to go up against. In this case, it is the Chitauri. And it just felt like there was no reason for them to be there and no reason for the Avengers to be fighting them other than the fact that they add more firepower to Loki's side so that they all have to assemble in order to beat this force. It just felt kind of, it felt kind of small scale. I wasn't a huge fan of the giant centipedes flying in the sky. I didn't think they were scary or I didn't think they posed a great threat. They just looked kind of strange. Mostly I just didn't feel like there were any stakes. I didn't feel like the world was under attack. Even though that's what's happening on screen, it didn't feel like, oh my God, these Avengers better beat these guys or something. Some really bad shit's going to happen. I know that it was a hard thing to do you have to have a big villain in order to make it seem like it's necessary for all these superheroes to team up, and fight this force. And I understand that we didn't need to spend more characterization time on the heroes of the story, but, I just wasn't a big fan of the Chitauri. I didn't think it was a formidable force. I didn't really understand what they were doing. But that's kind of my biggest issue with the movie.
Okay. Dave, what about you? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to disagree a little bit about the villain side of things. I thought that Whedon handled Hiddleston's character, handled Loki fantastically. I love the fact that Loki was kind of the center point, the reason to get everybody together, but also in individual scenes. You know, he was the focal point getting these guys.
Sorry, yeah, I wasn't saying I thought Loki is fantastic and I think he's a great villain. My issue is with the Chitauri.
I'll get into those in a second, too. I just wanted to highlight Hiddleston's portrayal as Loki, because he had kind of an interesting character that I'm assuming Whedon, you know, himself kind of drafted up for him, because he's. You know, he's not only the big baddie in this, as far as the Avengers and S.H.I.E.L.D. is concerned, but he's also kind of a pawn in these sort of shadowy, otherworldly creatures. Because there's a scene where he's sort of having this communication back and forth, which I don't know what their names are in this other realm. But you can tell that they kind of hold sway over him to some point. So he's kind of stuck in between two different power plays here. So I thought it was interesting the way that they handled his character. Basically, just going back to Adam's point that the Chitauri, as far as villains, weren't exactly fleshed out. They didn't really have a high-stakes kind of attitude that would necessitate this group of superheroes coming together for this express purpose. What I thought was more interesting was the fact that another level of villain was sort of introduced as these Chitauri are sort of pouring out into Manhattan and the Avengers are sort of struggling and it's looking like they might not be able to get the job done. Nick Fury of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of got this order from on high. They're going to level the city of Manhattan. So now not only do the Avengers have to deal with Loki and the threat of this alien race, the Chitauri, but they also have to deal with their own people trying to basically annihilate them to preserve the rest of the world. I thought it was a good way to weave in a little bit of a threat, a worthwhile threat. It's tough. It really is tough to introduce one villain that necessitates bringing all these people together. So I was okay with that storyline. And like Adam mentioned as well, he had to spend more time kind of getting these characters together. You spend more time in the movie watching the heroes fight each other, which I thought was great. You spend more time watching them kind of go one-on-one and butt heads against each other almost than you do watching them fight the villains. So I thought that was kind of an interesting layer to it. So overall, the fact that the villains weren't quite that threatening didn't bother me quite as much, especially considering the end credit scene, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Okay, so it seems like y'all both had kind of an issue with the Chitauri. I think it's important to just take a moment to point out, and this is not from my own knowledge, this was a Wikipedia thing, trying to find out, were the Chitauri just an invention of the movie itself, or do they come from the comics? They come from the comics. The Chitauri are from the Ultimate Marvel Universe, and they are known on other universes as, in some other worlds, as the Skrulls. Now, Skrulls are, we reported this years ago about, are the Skrulls the villain in the Avengers? Technically, yes, and some kind of yes, kind of no. The Skrulls, for those who don't know, in the comics, they are shapeshifters who, and not just shapeshifters in the terms of like Mystique and she can take other people's forms. Shapeshifters in the sense that when they fight the Fantastic Four, they can, you know, take part of the Thing and part of the Human Torch and part of Reed Richards and combine that into one really powerful force. The Chitauri can't do that. Again, in the comics, obviously the movies can do whatever they want to do, but it's interesting that perhaps the Chitauri weren't just brought in as cannon fodder for the Avengers, but perhaps as something to lead into another aspect of the Marvel Universe that is much bigger. So I just wanted to make clear for listeners that the Chitauri are not a pure invention of the movie. They do come from the comics, and that their origins can lead to something much, much bigger. So if you, so I don't know about you guys, but for those who felt like, oh, the Chitauri, who cares, there might be a payoff later. I'm not sure, but we may not have seen the last of them is my larger point. So it seems like y'all liked, most of the film. I did as well. I'm interested. It's interesting that y'all said you liked Loki.
Oh, I loved him. I knew that going into it, that I was going to love the character. I could just kind of tell from the marketing material and stuff that we'd seen. So I was really excited to see Hiddleston's characterization of him.
Now, see, I didn't mention this in my review, but it's something that I've kind of turned over a couple times. And it's not that I dislike Loki in this film, but I think I watched all the previous Marvel movies before I went to see the Avengers for a second time. And I think Loki is a better character in Thor because he's more... he has more time to be well-rounded.
Sure.
And I feel like some of that doesn't carry over into the Avengers. I think the moments where he's sympathetic are when he's interacting with Thor. And in fact, I think that's Thor's big contribution to the movie, is in humanizing Loki and reminding us that Loki's true nature, as one character points out, that he's always doomed to fail because he always needs a stage. He's always trying to prove himself.
Sure.
And I think that does come across in the Avengers, but I do also feel that if without Thor in play, there's almost an element where Loki trips a little too far into the sort of mustache twirling villainy.
Yeah. There definitely was an essence of that. Yeah. Definitely.
His character has this whole thing in the film about deep down, you freedom is death and you want to be ruled, and I felt like there was never a contradictory thematic payoff where someone disproves Loki's philosophy, and I was kind of waiting for that moment where it's not just they bring Loki down physically, but they're like, what you believe about humans simply isn't true.
See, I kind of have to disagree a little bit. I mean, it wasn't that strong of a counterpoint, but the irony of the fact that he was saying this about the lesser beings he sees humans as. Meanwhile, he's kind of lamenting this fact. There's a line where he says, you know, he's like, I was once a king, or I was a king. I feel like he's trying to get that back in a sense.
But oh, absolutely.
At the same time, he's also got the shadowy... whoever were the rulers of the Chitauri. I don't know what their names were. I don't think they ever really expressed
that.
They don't say who the leader of
the Chitauri is. They just say he's sort of the Chitauri leader, and that's good enough.
But the funny thing is that he's using Loki as his pawn, as his, you know, sort of link to get to this world too. So Loki is, you know, on his high horse and literally up on his throne saying that everyone, you know, desires to be ruled and they don't actually want freedom. Meanwhile, he's not only trying to get back his sort of false kinghood, but he's the one that's actually being sort of pushed around as a pawn too. So I thought it wasn't very explicit, but I thought it was an interesting kind of play just as a side story with Loki's character. It just made him rounded him a little bit enough that I could, you know, go along with it for the rest of the movie.
Sure. I get that. Adam, what about you? Were you just with down with Loki the whole time?
Well, the way I kind of read Loki's character, and I don't know if this is the way it's supposed to be read or not. I felt like most of Loki's motivations were still informed by what happened in Thor. And I felt like he was basically just full of shit when he was talking about, you know, freedom and all that stuff. Basically, I in my mind, Loki's motivations was, why would my brother defend these puny people of Earth? Like, why would he stand up against me to save these stupid Earthlings? Like, and I felt like part of his motivation was like, well, I'll just wipe that whole planet off the face of the Earth. Just to get back with his brother. I felt like most of his motivation still came from the reactions with his brother and his father, and little had to do with what he was claiming to be fighting for.
Well, yeah, and I think they touched on that too, because there was that little, I mean, you can call it a cameo, it was like a screenshot of Natalie Portman's character from Thor. So yeah. I think they did kind of tie Thor's, you know, love for, well, one particular human and humans in general back into that. So that's a valid point.
Well, I found it interesting. I find it interesting that Tom Hiddleston will be back for Thor 2. I don't know for certain if Loki is the villain of Thor 2, but he's coming back. I don't know.
Kevin Feige said he's not. He said there will be a big villain in Thor 2, but Loki will certainly be back as well.
Okay,
but he's not the main villain.
Okay, so he's not the main villain. So, but I guess my question is how much of a factor is he in Thor 2? Is it more of just like is it a small role, or does he play a very important part, even if he's not the big villain? So I'm interested in that, and I like the idea of Loki continuing on as a central part of Thor's story, because I think we've been conditioned where every superhero movie needs a new villain. That's the thing. You come back and you get a new villain. I like the idea of a superhero constantly wrestling with his arch nemesis. Now, if you're Batman and you have a huge rogues gallery, you don't necessarily need to do that. However, I would love for Red Skull to come back in Captain America 2. I loved Hugo Weaving as Red Skull. Red Skull doesn't die at the end of Captain America. I believe I can say that's been out for a year, but actually some people might be confused. If you saw it, it's like, I think he died. He didn't die. He got sucked up into the cosmos. He can easily come back. I think they should bring him back, because quick, name another Captain America villain. That's what I
think. Yeah. Other than Zemo or
Russia.
I'm just trying to think. Russia.
Russia. Well, no, that's another thing. They set up the possibility of Winter Soldier. That's another thing that gets set up in Captain America. And so I like the idea of not just saying you can have new things. Obviously, that's not for everyone. Iron Man 3 will have a new villain. And I want to actually go back. I think this is good. We've talked about Avengers, but I like talking about the future now. And Iron Man 3, it's been said it's its own thing. We're not doing another sort of big Avengers thing, but it pulls from the Avengers that when Captain America tells him, you know, take away the suit and what are you? And and Iron Man has a very snippy kind of funny answer. What's interesting, in the movie he plays that line seriously, but in the commercials it's a joke line. I thought that was
actually a different take too. It wasn't even just the same, you know, the same delivery spun in a different context. It was like a completely different delivery too.
Exactly.
I found that kind of strange.
Yeah, so that's a different thing, but it's looking like the villain will be the Mandarin, who's sort of Iron Man's arch nemesis. They've mentioned the Ten Rings.
Right.
They mentioned it directly in the first movie. You have to look for it in the credits of the second movie. But the idea that Iron Man 3 will be this thing, will like take away the suit, it'll be more like Iron Man 1. I watched Iron Man and Iron Man 2 last week, and God help me, they cannot have him fighting more people in robot suits. That's it.
Right.
We're done with that. You can't do
done
that.
Done with
anymore.
That.
We're done. Iron Man 2 is not a good. It's not an awful film, but it's not good.
No.
I think it's worth watching for Sam Rockwell, but watching the two so close back to basically, I watched Iron Man one day and then Iron Man 2 the following day. And Iron Man 2 just feels so anticlimactic. Mm-hmm. Iron Man, there's a huge battle, and Iron Man is going to sacrifice himself so he can defeat Ironmonger and just, like, save the day, even if it means, like, killing himself. Iron Man 2 is like, let's War Machine, let's use our repulsor beams together and kill Whiplash, who's never called Whiplash, although Ironmonger's never called Ironmonger. Let's just kill the villain by, you know, our powers combined, twin powers combined, blow him up, and then the end is Gary Shandling puts a medal on me. Compare that to Iron Man, where it's like, this big moment's like, I am Iron Man. Dun, 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 dun. Like, the music kicks in. Iron Man 2 just kind of like, movie's over now. That's it. We're done.
John Favreau was like, I'm out. Let me out of here. Get me out.
Yeah. So,
well, now, what about for Captain America 2, though? Because how are they going to keep that sort of in canon between the ending of the first one and Avengers? You know, is it going to be a contemporary?
They said that they're going to switch back and forth, that they're going to have stuff from the 1940s and new stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting play. I agree, to see how that one plays out. He definitely has a clear place to go, which is, how do I adjust to this new world?
Sure. Yeah.
Whereas everyone else, where Iron Man and Thor kind of just get to stay in the world that they've already created.
Well, and that's the thing with Thor too. You can move him anywhere you want, because he can sort of come and go as he pleases. So, I mean, whatever you want to do with his sequel that's pretty much an open book.
I did like that little shortcut about, like, Thor kind of ends. It's like, how will he get back? And then in Avengers, it's like, I rebuilt the Bifrost. Like, that was it. like some big shack was like, oh, they made it again. Just rebuilt it. We got some contractors on it. They made some more Rainbow Bridge, and here I am. So I don't know if that'll come back in Thor 2, where it's like, you brought me back, but now I have the tell. I just thought that was amusing about, it wasn't that hard to bring Thor back into the fold after all.
I'm definitely encouraged by Shane Black and the cast that's coming together for Iron Man 3, though.
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely some stuff to look forward to, for sure. We've gotten the Avengers. I feel a little greedy. It's like, gave us this big epic superhero movie that's never been done before. Now what do you got? Now what are you doing for me?
Yeah, what's next? I would love to see a Hulk movie, but I don't know if they're going to be able to make that work. Because like you said, Matt, I think you said it before, does he just work within the confines of that, you know, assembly of superheroes, because he's kind of the loose cannon? Or can he sustain his own feature? It seems like they finally got a handle on how to portray him, the level of humor, the level of destruction, and the level of his strength, too, which I don't think they've ever done in any of the previous movies. But can he handle his own feature?
I agree. That's a very tough question. The feature I want to see coming out of this is a Black Widow and Hawkeye movie.
Yeah,
putting them together and making it – they've kind of discussed making a Black Widow spinoff, kind of like a spy thriller. And either way, I think that would be a great way to – rather than do a separate Black Widow and a separate Hawkeye film, which is kind of complicated, putting them together, because that's what the Avengers does. It makes them peas in a pod.
Do you guys watch Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, the animated cartoon at all?
No, I do not.
No, it's actually really good, and they are sort of they're kind of like that. They're kind of a team that's sort of at odds with each other, but there's a lot of backstory to the two of them. So a feature with the two of them is a definite possibility. I think there's a lot of story there they could make work.
Yeah, I would definitely like to see a movie called Black Widow, The Red Ledger. I think the Red Ledger. Red Ledger.
It's a lot of red.
A lot of red in the ledger.
I think that Mark Ruffalo is going to show up in Iron Man 3. Just kind of the rapport that he and Robert Downey Jr. had in the Avengers. And, I mean, it ends with them getting in a car together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so we do have one more thing to talk about the Avengers, but it comes in the credits. So that is – we can tell you that Mark Ruffalo and Robert Downey Jr. get in a car together. I don't think that qualifies as a spoiler. This would probably be considered a spoiler. So we're going to hold that until after our recommendations. But let's do recommendations. Dave, what do you got for us?
Yeah, so since we spent a good portion of the show talking about Joss Whedon, for anybody that's not familiar with him, please go back and look at some of his earlier works. You can definitely see that everything this man has learned over the course of his career is on display in the Avengers, and it's the reason it made, you know, $200-some-odd million in opening weekend. He's gone through a lot of successes, a lot of, you know, sort of cult fame status, but he never really had that big breakout moment until this past weekend. So go back, watch Firefly, watch even Serenity as an extension of Firefly. Please go see Cabin in the Woods because that's still in theaters, I believe, and could definitely use some help. Honestly, just go back and look at the guy's whole repertoire and just go back and see kind of where he started, and you'll see a lot of similarities. If you liked Avengers, you'll see a lot of similarities with his older work.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm glad you recommended those, and you're like, you should really check out Alien Resurrection.
Which he has disowned.
And
you know what, though? I love the whole Alien series. I'll just say that, too. I love the whole thing.
To be perfectly honest, I don't hate Alien Resurrection either.
I don't either.
I don't think the level of hate that's thrown at it is deserved.
Right.
Anyway, we can save that for some Prometheus talk later on, can't we? Adam, what about you? What do you got for us?
One of my favorite things about the Avengers was definitely the rapport between Robert Downey Jr. and Mark Ruffalo. And if you, like me, enjoyed the two of them interacting, I'm going to recommend David Fincher's 2007 film Zodiac. I feel like it kind of gets overlooked sometimes. It's actually one of my favorites of David Fincher. He spent just 18 months conducting his own investigation and research before he even started filming the movie. And it centers on the serial killer who went by Zodiac in San Francisco during the late 60s and early 1970s. And Jake Gyllenhaal is the star. He stars as Robert Gray Smith, a cartoonist for the San Francisco Chronicle, who takes an interest in the case when he starts to decode some encrypted letters that are sent to the newspaper from the killer. The film spans a 14-year time period. It follows Gray Smith's obsession with the case. Mark Ruffalo plays SFPD Inspector David Tosche, and Robert Downey Jr. plays Paul Avery, who was a flamboyant crime reporter for the Chronicle. There's some really great interactions, stellar cast that also includes Anthony Edwards, Brian Cox, John Carroll Lynch, Chloe Sevigny, Dermot Mulroney. It's really, really interesting procedural. It's Fincher's take on a procedural. It's not flamboyant or flashy kind of like Seven was. It doesn't really linger in the killings or anything. It's very, very straightforward, very long. It's not on instant watch, but if you haven't seen it, I highly suggest you check it out. And if you have seen it, I suggest you go back and revisit it, because it's kind of a gem that's kind of been hidden.
Okay. I'm going to break from Avengers stuff and look at this past week in news for my recommendation, because we reported on David Cronenberg on what his vision for Total Recall would be. He actually had the gig and was developing scripts for it and even concept art before he and Dino De Laurentiis parted ways, because their visions just never came together. And then Paul Verhoeven came on board and they made a great film anyway. But Cronenberg went on to do The Fly, and everyone was happy. And then we also showed a trailer and some clips from Cronenberg's new film, Cosmopolis, which will be premiering at the Cannes Film Festival. And that kind of seems like a return to his very trippy roots after doing more straight fare, like A History of Violence and Eastern Promises and A Dangerous Method. So the film I want to recommend is 1988's Dead Ringers, which is just this really great blend of a psychological thriller, but still that phantasmagorical aspect that is one of Cronenberg's trademarks, with also the psychosexual aspect of it. The plot is Jeremy Irons, and what I think is his best performance, plays twins, and they are gynecologists, and one is more sexually aggressive and really confident, and the other one's sort of shy and reserved, and they both kind of fall for this woman who has a trifurcated cervix. I'm reading. She had to check Wikipedia on that. I'm like, how's your cervix doing? Trifurcated. All right, got that fact checked. And so it deals with sort of this weird, this weird incestuous relationship between the brothers. Like, it's not overt, but they have this really strange thing, obsession with their twins. So there's that element to it. It's such a weird, trippy film, but absolutely captivating. Again, just an amazing performance, or I guess performances, by Jeremy Irons. And so Cosmopolis will almost definitely come out this year in the U.S. I'm really excited to hear what the word on it will be out of the Cannes Film Festival. And so if you're trying to get more Cronenberg in your life, this is definitely one of his films that you have to see. So Dead Ringers, not on Instant Watch, but you know, find a place that rents DVDs and has it, or just yeah, or use Netflix's DVD service, or find an indie DVD place because there are no more.
Quickster,
damn it! Support your local indie video store. We have a great place called Videodrome here in Atlanta. I kid you not, that's the name, Videodrome. So there's another tie-in, because there aren't Blockbusters around anymore, and they probably wouldn't have had Dead Ringers anyway, because they suck. All right, so thank you for joining us. If you're not going to stay tuned for what we have to say about the ending of The Avengers, but thank you for listening. Just to let you know, the technical aspects, we are going to work those out. I'm looking into programs this week, going to start spending a little money because I'm having a great time doing this. Adam, Dave, are you guys having fun with the podcast?
Heck yeah. Where else am I going to hear about a trifurcated cervix?
I know, right? You know where you're going to hear about it? You're going to hear about it on the New York Times tech podcast. The water cooler podcast somewhere where they're talking about The Good Wife. And they're like, by the way, have you talked about the trifurcated cervix on The Good Wife? And God. So, yes, we're having a good time doing this. And so it's clearly worth more money to me. So I'm going to look into buying some programs. And we're also trying to – thanks for everyone who's been trying to help us out with our iTunes problem. We're going to try to get that solved as well. And so thank you all for listening. As always, we welcome and encourage your comments and to help us make this show better. And we hope – you're having as much fun listening to it as we're having as much fun doing it. So thank you. We'll be back next week to talk about Dark Shadows and whatever else news breaks. So thanks for joining us. And now we will turn to the end credit scene of The Avengers. So you guys mind if I just run through it? What happens?
Yeah, good.
All right. So here's what happens. Close credits, run through the main names of the cast, blah, blah, blah. If you haven't learned to sit through the credits of a Marvel movie by now, really, you haven't. You probably haven't figured it out. It's like, who's Nick Fury? And he's the guy at the end of all the movies. And it's kind of in Iron Man 2 a little bit. So here's what happened. So the Chitauri army leader guy it turns out he was in cahoots with another sort of dark shadowy figure. And he's like, the humans are not to be underestimated. to challenge them would be to court death. And sort of there's this close up on this sort of hooded figure, and he turns towards the camera, and it's Thanos. And if you're a comic geek, you're like, oh, it's Thanos. And if you're someone else, you're like, who's that purple gentleman, and why is he smiling at us? And so for those, if you don't know Thanos is basically, he's this space alien who came from a race called the Eternals, but they're all pretty and powerful, but he's all deformed and ugly, and that makes him just obsessed with death. Basically, he's an ugly kid that becomes really emo, and he becomes obsessed with death and wanting to kill everyone. So past the emo into the disturbed realm but on a cosmic level. So, but he's obsessed with death. That's his big thing. And then later on, he gets the Infinity Gauntlet, and Marvel they've shown off the Infinity Gauntlet at Comic-Con. It's one of the items that was in Thor's in the throne room, or the Odin's vault in Thor, but they actually never show it. I checked. I'm like, where the fuck is that Infinity Gauntlet? It's not there, but it's in behind the scenes stuff. So they've introduced the Infinity Gauntlet. Now they've introduced Thanos. It looks like Thanos will be the villain of the Avengers 2, and possibly a character who could conceivably appear in the movies leading up to the Avengers 2. Adam, what did you think about the Thanos reveal? Did you know who Thanos was before you saw the Avengers?
I did not. I turned to my trusty comic book friend next to me. I said, who's that guy? And he explained it to me. But more importantly, what I thought this signaled to me is that Marvel is seeing with Thor that audiences will buy a mythical comic book movie, a comic book movie that isn't completely set on Earth. So this tells me that Marvel is looking to go cosmic and to do more outer space set things. I mean, Iron Man's been to outer space now. In the Avengers, he went up to outer space too. So I think that's kind of exciting. I mean, we've heard a lot of rumors about Guardians of the Galaxy. So that's kind of what it means to me, because I don't know much about Thanos. But yeah, I would assume he would be the villain of the Avengers 2.
Dave, what about you? Did you know who Thanos was at the end?
Yeah, so as soon as he turned around, you know, I kind of smiled along with creepy purple gentleman because I thought that was pretty cool. I'm not super familiar with him, but I know who he is. I know his basic storyline. And that's why I was saying, you know, I had discussions with my comic book geek friends, and they're like, they really need to power these guys up for the next, you know, for the next movie, for the sequel. Because right now, I mean, you've got a demigod, and that's about it. I mean, as far as your power level goes, you're not going to be able to take on somebody like Thanos and something like this. So that was leading us into a discussion about who else are they going to bring in. So there's people out there like Adam Warlock. I don't think they can bring in, you know, Silver Surfer. I think he's still tied up with Fox's property for Fantastic Four. They're going to have to bring somebody in here, though. The interesting thing is they're going to now have to do that bridge between pseudo-realistic superheroes and, like Adam was saying, sort of this cosmic, this celestial, this sort of magic element. And they're going to have to tie those two things together. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out in the next few years, if he's definitely the villain for the next movie.
I'm curious to see what he's after. If the Tesseract, or the Cosmic Cube, as it's called in the comics, if he's still after that, because that seems to be what he's after. That's the big MacGuffin in the Avengers. And
sure.
But we want the Cosmic Cube, and that's really the MacGuffin in as well as, well, not, it's an important thing. It's like something that was in Thor and in Captain America and Avengers. So I don't know if Thanos is still after that, or if the chase will now be for the Infinity Gauntlet, if that will be the new MacGuffin, because really that's where he gets all his powers, because the Infinity Gauntlet can do just about anything, just like the Cosmic Cube, or I'm sorry, the Tesseract.
The Tesseract.
And that's one of those things, what we're talking about. Like, how can, because it's like, oh, we can't call it a Cosmic Cube because that's not realistic. We have to call it the Tesseract. I'm like, really? Because, okay, fine. Because, again, that's striking that balance. But I assume, come on, you have to call it the Infinity Gauntlet. You can't call it, what are you going to call it? The Super Power Glove?
No, it's going to, yeah, definitely not Nintendo Power Glove. I don't think that's going
to
fly.
Power Glove. I would love that. So, again, they have to sort of figure out what they're going to call things and what.
I think the best way to introduce that is going to have to be on Thor's side of things, because they can get away with some of this haughty talk. They can get away with some of these, you know, these boisterous kind of attitudes and names for things, because it's like, ah, there's sort of these mythical, weird, you know, magic people that live not on our planet. So they can get away with that. Like, one of the greatest lines from the Avengers is when, you know, Thor and Loki are fighting and Thor says something like, "Do I appear to be in a gaming mood?" I mean, like, stuff like that you can get away with when you're Thor or when you're Odin or when you're Loki or any of those guys. So I think that mythology is going to have to come from that side.
I absolutely agree. And I think the thing about Thanos is you just can't leave him hanging.
No.
You can't just be like, in the event, you know, Thanos will return in the Avengers too. It's like, no, yeah. This has to be like Nick Fury. You have to kind of keep reminding audiences. And also, you do also have to start explaining who he is. And I think that was one of the advantages of the Avengers, is you don't have to go back and really explain who everyone is and where they come from. That was the advantage, is you have this team together and it's like, okay, Thor comes from here, Captain America comes from here, Iron Man comes from here, and you don't need to do 18 different introductions. You either know who these people are or not. And by sort of building some Thanos backstory into the interim movies, you can sort of adjust audience. Because again, a lot of people don't know who Thanos is. They sure have no clue. And also, there's no actor to tie it to. That's the other problem.
Yeah, exactly.
At least not at this point. I mean, they could cast anyone as motion capture Thanos.
Sure.
But we don't know who that is yet. I can't. Who should be Thanos? Like, let that. Oh my God, I can't. That's the next big casting race.
Yeah, it is.
The race for Thanos. And we'll just all put guns in our mouths and just.
I'll say Michael Clark Duncan. Done.
Okay. Well,
problem solved. Just for the voice, because I mean, it doesn't matter what you look like for that.
I'll say Daniel Day-Lewis, because that guy can do anything.
Okay, sounds good.
He's an incredible.
He hasn't been purple
actor
yet, so.
Yeah,
I think Zac Efron's going to take a dark turn in his career.
Oh God, that's going to be brilliant. It's like, I don't know if Zac Efron will make a good Thanos. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, let's have
someone will come up with that. Yeah.
People will argue. It's like, I think so and so would be a good Thanos. I'm like, I can understand like a good Captain America, like a good human looking person, but
yes, that makes sense.
Come on, who will
you just need a voice. You need a voice and a presence. That's really all you need for somebody like that.
Exactly. Especially because they've kind of, this isn't going to be like a Hulk kind of looks like Ruffalo thing. The Thanos face
kind
of has to be the Thanos face. It's not
exactly
like, Thanos transforms from a person. So
it's going to be interesting to see if we look back on this in 2015 or whenever and say like, oh, that was brilliant, like teeing up, because as it stands now, Thor 2 comes out in November of 2013. If, as you guys said, they're going to start laying the groundwork for Thanos in that, we've got Captain America 2 in May of 2014 and then another unnamed Marvel movie in 2014 as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they thread that cosmic presence through those movies.
Absolutely. So it'll definitely I'm very curious to see what's the unnamed Marvel movie of 2014.
Well, I don't know if it'll have to do with that. Sorry to cut you off, but you had mentioned about just talking about the Skrull earlier and the fact that the Chitauri are kind of like a transitional kind of introduction to that sort of storyline. That can tie in too, because there are some good guys with some, you know, that are pretty powered up that kind of come from that storyline. So that might be a way to introduce a new hero that's going to sort of help the Avengers out.
Yeah. See, I don't think they've entirely killed off the Chitauri, because the Chitauri leader guy is still there. Yeah. I mean, so it's not like what he did. It's like you come to the Avengers too. It's like, what happened to that guy? Oh, he retired. He went to Palm Springs and he just sort of gave up on universe domination. And I get that. He has a nice 401k built up and just he's chilling back on the golf course. Chitauri army leader who doesn't have a name. I think that dude was played by Alexis Denisoff, by the way. Like, Alexis Denisoff is in the Avengers, but like, I think that's who he is. I think he provides the voice of the Chitauri army leader. Who, those who don't know Alexis Denisoff is. Oh, he's known as the Other. So presumably that's the guy.
Sure.
So yeah. So Alexis Denisoff was Wesley on Angel, and before that, a character on Buffy. So he's one of Whedon's guys from Team Whedon. Hey, let's pull from Team Whedon to make Thanos. Who would be?
what's Spike up to these days?
Yeah,
boys.
There you go. All right. So we have done our speculation and reflection on the Avengers, and this has been great. It definitely feels like a big film in the making. It's great talking about it with you guys, and I look forward to discussing Dark Shadows next week.
Sounds good. Woo-hoo.
All right. So thanks, everyone, for sticking around and listening to us chat about Thanos. And we will return with more Collision goodness next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.